Well, it's the slave trade and slavery, and those are two slightly different things, I would say. Our project deals with slavery and slave ownership, and I'll come back to that. Another very big project called the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database has dealt with the slave trade. And really both projects, ours and the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database, are informed by a view that in order to settle or provide some form of possibility for the settlement of this argument between Williams and Ikori on the one hand, Altus and Engelmann on the other, that we need to go back and look at the evidence. And as long as the debate is pitched at the level of the kind of economic system, then it's not going to be possible to resolve that discussion. It's an oh yes it did, oh no it didn't kind of discussion between people whose views are already set. So to say, we're trying to neutralize that discussion, if you like, and look at the underlying evidence. What the slave trade, Transatlantic Slave Trade Database does is set out the extent of Britain's participation in the slave trade. This very elaborate collection of research that demonstrates that Britain was, in the 18th century, by a distance, the leading slave trader. In the entire period of the slave trade, from the beginning to the end, the most important stream of movement of people, the enforced movement of people, is between southwestern Africa, the southern part of West Africa, and Brazil. Okay. That Brazil-Portugal stream is the single largest stream amongst all the movement of people. And then the second largest is the movement by the British, both into our own colonies and into the colonies of other countries. And in the 18th century, we are the biggest single factor. We come later into this than the Portuguese and we leave earlier. But as I said, in the 18th century, we're the biggest single factor. So that the slave trade database is generating empirical and indisputable material about the extent of Britain's involvement. What we're trying to do in our project is to look at not slave trading per se, but at slave ownership. And although those individuals overlap between slave traders and slave owners, in most cases, these are distinct and separate people. Slave traders specialize in moving the people. The slave owners, by definition, own land and then come to own people in the Caribbean. And their function, their economic function, is to extract the labor from enslaved people, turn it into commodities, repatriate those commodities to Britain. And in repatriating their commodities, they're repatriating wealth. They don't have to worry about moving money or bullion. They just have to ship the sugar that they're growing. And that's how they move their money back to Britain. And so what we're trying to do is to examine the entirety of the British slave owners and look at what role they played in economic, commercial development in Britain, as well as cultural, social, philanthropic legacies that they left in this country, identifiably from their holding of enslaved people. Part of the evidence that we've used have been the compensation records, and that refers to what happened in the 1830s. We talked about the abolition of slavery under the 1833 Abolition Act. What that act provided was that the enslaved people would continue to work for their previous owners for 45 hours per week for a period of 4 to 6 years for free without being paid. This was intended, obviously, as a transition both for the slave owners and for the enslaved people, to acclimate them to working for wages and the other 15 hours a week. You recognize there was a 60-hour week that was assumed to be a normal working week. But the other significant component of the Abolition Act was the payment of compensation to the slave owners. And the British state paid £20 million, which it borrowed through the money markets. It paid £20 million to the slave owners in 1833. £20 million in today's terms, if you use average wages as the measure, which is the one we prefer to use, is about £17 billion in today's terms. And that money flowed to 45,000 slave owners in the British Empire. It included French slave owners, for example, in Mauritius, which Britain had seized from Napoleonic France in 1815. It included Dutch slave owners in the Cape of Good Hope, which were taken from the Dutch, obviously, in the same process of kind of penalizing France and its allies for losing the Napoleonic Wars to us. But it included also, obviously, many slave owners living in Britain, living and working and spending their money in Britain. And what we're doing is looking in turn at each of those individuals to trace the money that they received in the compensation process and see where it went. That's one of the most kind of immediate and visible forms in which you can see the profits of slavery transferring into British life, whether it's economic or cultural or social life.